mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, once upon a time, most middle-class families could be supported by a single breadwinner. Now a new Bankrate study finds that for a growing number of households, even having dual incomes is no longer enough. Also this morning, artificial intelligence is still a mystery to many people, but you're probably already interacting with AI technology without even realizing it. Every time you go shopping, we'll explain. And happening around town, strap on some spurs, don your 10-gallon hat, and round up the posse. It's Cowboy Days this weekend at Ghost Town. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, July 18th, 2024. So this is pretty good Ohio news. This is really cool. Cincinnati-based Skyline Chili has been named the best regional fast food chain in the country. The best regional fast food chain. Restaurant first opened in 1949 in the Queen City and has since grown to more than 150 locations across Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, and even Florida, which is, it's always weird when I go outside of Ohio and I see Skyline Chili restaurants, because, you know, it is a very regional thing. You know, Cincinnati-style chili, as popularized by Skyline. So you find one in Florida, and you think, that's kind of interesting. And I think this is probably true of all regional restaurants, all regional delicacies. Cincinnati-style chili, Skyline Chili, It generates very strong opinions. Some people really love it. Other people really hate it. There are very few people who are sitting the fence when it comes to Skyline Chili. It's like any regional thing, like In-N-Out Burger out west, or Whataburger, or Fat Burger in the South. Yeah, any of those regional things. People are very... So are you a Cincinnati-style chili aficionado? Or, you know, are you a love-it-or-hate-it kind of person? I love it myself. But I recognize that not everybody shares that opinion. But it is the number one best regional fast food chain in the country, according to USA Today's 10 Best Reader's Choice Awards. That were just published this week. So, there you go. Kind of interesting. And, you know, pretty, you know, it was a feather in our cap for the state of Ohio, one way or the other. I mean, you can not like Skyline Chili and still say that's pretty cool, right? So, let's see. What else going on in the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day? Probably no big surprise that he's doing this. Former President Trump is now selling shoes featuring a picture from the moments after the assassination attempt. If you wondered how long it would take for this to go from a very serious political moment, turning point in the election, you know, a very, you know, grave moment in our national history, to a pop culture moment, now you have the answer. It's now officially become a pop culture moment, as the former president is selling shoes that feature a picture from right after the election, or right after the assassination attempt. A company owned by Trump put the shoes, called Fight, Fight, Fight High Tops, on sale yesterday. Fight, Fight, Fight High Tops. The side of the shoes have a picture of Trump with his raised fist and blood splattered across his face, with the words Fight, Fight, Fight imprinted below. They are limited to 5,000 pairs, so a limited edition sneaker, limited edition high tops, and they cost about $300. And within like 12 hours, they went on sale yesterday, and by the end of the day, some sizes were already sold out. So you knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. How long would it take? Now we have the answer. By the way, speaking of the assassination attempt, the man who shot President Reagan had a reaction to the shooting of former President Trump. In a post on X, formerly Twitter, on Wednesday, John Hinckley Jr. said, quote, "Violence is not the way to go. Give peace a chance," unquote. John Hinckley Jr. Said that. He, of course, shot Reagan when he was 25 years old. Hinckley, not Reagan. When Hinckley was 25 years old, shot Reagan and three others in 1981. He was acquitted of the charges the following year by reason of insanity, and was granted a full unconditional release from court oversight a couple of years ago in 2022. So, if you were wondering, I don't know. Does anybody really care? But in the interest of completeness, I don't point that out. By the way, speaking of presidential politics, the calls for a new candidate on the other side keep getting louder. Congressman Adam Schiff is the latest high-profile Democrat to call for Joe Biden to drop out of the presidential race. I thought this was kind of interesting. The president himself, who you recall recently said in an ABC interview that the only way he would quit the race is if God Almighty came down and told him to. Well, it appears that he is softening his stance on that a bit. In an interview with BET News just yesterday, I think it was, being reported this morning, in an interview with BET News, Mr. Biden said he would drop out if doctors told him he had a serious medical condition. So, apparently he is warming to the idea of stepping aside. It's gone from God Almighty to just the doctors telling them he has a serious medical condition. In response to that statement, the rest of the party said, "Is there a doctor in the house anywhere? Is that all it would take? We got to be able to find a doctor who would say he's got a serious medical condition, right?" Anyway, so enough about that. This I thought was kind of interesting and may be of interest to many in the community, being that we are a very agriculturally centered community in large part, strong agricultural community. So you may find this interesting. John Deere is scaling back on its DEI initiatives, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, which have become a lightning rod of controversy, particularly in conservative circles. And we know that the agriculture community, by and large, would fall into that category. So the tractor company released a statement this week saying it would be changing or eliminating multiple diversity, equity, and inclusion policies and would be auditing all company-mandated training materials to ensure the absence of socially motivated messages. They would make sure that they wanted to ensure the absence of socially motivated messages. Statement went on to say that John Deere will no longer participate in or support external social or cultural awareness parades, festivals, or events. Now, there will be those who will loudly applaud John Deere's about face on this, or their this new public position with respect to all of these things. But I would suggest that it would be, in this day and age, in the environment that we are in today, that it is almost impossible not to avoid wading in to the, you know, the socially motivated messages or social or cultural awareness events, because just about anything you could spin that way, you know what I mean? And it just seems like anybody, if you're determined enough, you can turn anything into a socially motivated event or message or whatever. It's going to be very difficult to completely avoid ruffling any feathers in today's environment. You know what I mean? That's the bottom line. It's somebody is going to get bent out of shape regardless of, you know, their best intentions. I get it, and, you know, it's admirable to try and stay out of the fray, because I think a lot of businesses should do that, is just step back and, you know, stay in your lane. But it is tough. It is tough to do that these days. The statement John Deere made it clear that the changes they are undertaking or attempting to undertake are being made in response to customer feedback and customer opinion. So there you go. It does appear that their customers have made their voices heard loud and clear, which in and of itself can be interpreted as socially motivated messaging. You know what I mean? I mean, it's impossible to be completely out of the fray, no matter how hard you try. So. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, and this is maybe the most important story you'll hear this week, this month, this year. Researchers in Seattle have analyzed the habits of 1,400 healthy adults and their gut microbes, and they have found a link between gut health and regularity, if you know what I mean. The sweet spot when it comes to bathroom breaks is 1 to 2 bowel movements per day. We have research on this. Adults who go this often had beneficial amounts of bacteria in their guts. Those who suffered from issues, you know, diarrhea or conversely constipation, showed higher levels of less beneficial bacteria. Could even have issues with their kidneys. And they have too many problems, so they're not regular. So 1 to 2 times per day, that is the sweet spot for trips to the bathroom, according to this research. It's very important stuff. I want to make sure that you are aware. It is important research. Dr. Sean Gibbons says a fiber-rich diet, hydration, and exercise can help promote regularity. So now you know. You're welcome, America. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Plenty of sunshine expected today with a high in the upper 70s. Just a few clouds tonight, a low around 60. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is investigating a fatal motorcycle crash that happened in Wood County on the Ohio Turnpike near Interstate 280. The patrol says a Harley-Davidson motorcycle operated by a 58-year-old from Kentucky was westbound on the turnpike when the motorcycle blew a tire and the operator lost control and crashed. The 58-year-old operator of the motorcycle succumbed to fatal injuries at the scene of the crash. A passenger on the motorcycle, a 58-year-old from Kentucky, sustained serious injuries and was flown to a Toledo hospital. Get more on the crash in this story on our website. J.D. Vance is from Middletown, Ohio, and ONN affiliate WBNS-TV went there to talk with locals about their feelings about him being the vice presidential nominee.
They say they're excited about his quick rise in politics and love that he's from their town.
I think it'll be awesome, just for the city. I did vote for him when he ran for Senate, and seems to be a good guy from what I've seen of him.
And other people we spoke with did not want to go on camera because they either don't know much about Vance, don't like him, or disagree with his politics.
ONN's Yolanda Harris reporting. RCM Architects has shared some renderings of Finley's new YMCA Early Learning Center. To be located at the southwest corner of Hardin Street and Grand Avenue, RCM says the latest planning and designs for the Early Learning Center will expand classroom and multi-purpose square footage while increasing efficiencies and internal logistics. RCM says this will allow the YMCA to accept more children into their programming while offering additional internships and training opportunities for child care providers. You can see the renderings of what the Early Learning Center will look like in the story on our website. Last year, the Finley Family YMCA announced that it'll be building a new Y, with one of the key improvements being the addition of an early learning center to address the critical need for quality childcare in the area. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, of course, long gone are the days of a single breadwinner in the household being the norm. Making ends meet these days often means having a dual-income household, and a new Bankrate study suggests that even that may not be enough for a growing number of them. Bankrate senior industry analyst Ted Rossman is with us once again. And Ted, we've talked in the past about the number of Americans who have side hustles. This latest survey you have on this topic really jumped out at me for this number of people who say that they rely on that income to pay for everyday expenses.
That's right. Yeah, we see more than a third of U.S. adults, 36%, say they have a side hustle. That has basically doubled in the past 7 years. Back in 2017, when we started these surveys, we found that 19% of Americans had a side hustle. So it's really gone up a lot. It says something about the state of the economy and also technology. It has gotten easier to right. side hustle. To that point about discretionary spending versus regular living expenses, those are neck and neck for the most common use of side hustle money. So they're well ahead of other things like saving and investing and paying off debt. It's mostly a spending story. Discretionary spending is slightly ahead of regular living expenses, but a lot of people are finding, as you said, that one or even two incomes is not enough. It's often taking three or four for the household.
But even in the discretion, allocating that money for discretionary spending, I mean, one could argue that that even suggests that that one income per person is not enough to, you know, do all of those things that we used to think, you know, hey, one income every now and then we'd still be able to splurge now and then. And so, yeah, we may categorize this under discretionary spending, but, you know, it may signal that that discretionary income just isn't there with someone's regular job like maybe it used to be a generation ago.
That's right. And a lot of it comes back to inflation. Even though inflation's come down over the past year, the cumulative toll is significant. Since the beginning of 2022, prices have gone up about 20% on average. So that's the cumulative toll of inflation. There are higher interest rates as a result, too, and that's made it more difficult to pay off credit card debt. People are feeling it on all fronts. A lot of the data is pretty positive, actually, when you think about we recently had the longest stretch of sub 4% unemployment since the late 60s. Mm-hmm. We've had strong GDP growth. We've had strong consumer spending. None of this feels good, though, because inflation has been gobbling up a lot of the gains that people are making. And that's why more people are turning to side hustles.
Yeah. Now, I shouldn't in kind of framing this or the way, you know, I look at these numbers and what I see in those. I don't know how many of these individuals fall into that category of middle class dual income households to begin with. So, you know, these are to a certain extent kind of assumptions, but they seem fair. And of course, there are also those who, when we talk about side hustles, turn a hobby into a money making enterprise as well. Maybe not so much out of need as out of opportunity.
I love the idea of a passion project. There aren't that many side hustlers doing it. It's about 1 in 5, which surprised me. I thought we would see more people doing what they love. For example, I love sports. I used to think about working in the sports industry. I had a side hustle for a while, writing part-time for a fantasy sports website, and it was fun, and I made a little bit of money, but more than anything, it was enjoyable, and it was a few lines I could put on my resume if I ever wanted to go in that direction. That would be part of my urge to people is, you know, if you're thinking about this, do what you love. And, you know, who knows, maybe it does turn into your next big thing. It can also be a great tactic for coming up with extra money to go on vacation or splurge on a new TV or pay off credit card debt.
Yeah,
that's a huge one. I mean, the average credit card balance is around $6,000, according to TransUnion. the average side hustler brings in about $900 a month. So you could side hustle for 6 or 7 months and basically knock out your credit card debt. That would be huge.
Yeah, and that's another way to talk about some of the positive takeaways in this. You do find that people are making more today than they were a year ago. And the survey also notes that there are slightly fewer people overall as compared to last year doing the side hustle thing. Over time, as you mentioned, it's gone up, but compared to last year, there are slightly fewer. You credit easing as inflation as a reason for that. But you also have, and I thought this was kind of interesting, out just this week, another bank rate report in which 43% of people say that their finances have gotten worse under President Biden. Now, I don't want to turn this into a political discussion necessarily, but at the risk of going there anyway, how much of this is an in-the-moment perception? I mean, I'm wondering, is this a trend that may reverse itself once people start feeling like the economy is getting better and they're not being squeezed as much financially?
The time frame is significant. That question about are you better off or worse off than 4 years ago, yes, 43% said they're worse, but then that does leave 57% who are either better or the same. But that's relative to 4 years ago. Relative to 1 year ago, there's been a bit of improvement, and inflation has come down a bit. It's stabilized. One thing that I hear a lot from consumers, though, is they hear lower inflation and they think, oh, great, prices are going back to the way they were, let's say in 2019, like before the pandemic, before all the supply chain disruptions. Unfortunately, lower inflation doesn't mean prices are falling. It just means they're growing more slowly. And, you know, we have seen some improvement there. We've seen wage growth outpacing inflation basically for the past year. But a lot of this is local, and not just geographically, but also one's individual circumstances. So you have all kinds of variables in here. There's a lot of inequality in the economy, and there are a lot of people that feel that the economy is not really working for them, or they haven't gotten a raise, or they're not getting ahead. I mean, we see it in so many different ways. Half of credit card holders carry debt from month to month, and that has a very high interest rate. The average is almost 21%. The other half, they're benefiting from rewards and they're not paying interest. About 6 in 10 Americans own their homes and they're building equity. Not everybody's doing that, though. A similar proportion own stocks and they've enjoyed record highs, but then you have about 4 in 10 who are not sharing in that. So I think a lot of this relates to the side hustle discussion, too, when we think about who feels like they're getting ahead or at least doing okay versus those who feel that they're falling behind.
And of course, there are also those platforms, those businesses that are built on side hustles, on being side hustles. You're thinking, you know, Uber and DoorDash and things like that, that the entire business model is side hustles, is getting people to do these side hustles. And so I'm wondering, you know, is that driving the number of people who have these side hustles just because that's what, you know, those things are?
A lot of people are doing the gig economy thing now.
Yeah.
It's kind of a new-ish term for an old concept, but we're seeing more of it. There's less loyalty on both sides of the job market now, and it's not 50 years in the gold watch and the pension anymore. Gen Zers are the most likely to be side hustling. A lot of that's because the nature of work is changing. They're job hopping. They're trying different things. Mm-hmm. They're pulling in different revenue streams. I think this trend will continue. I expect that we'll see more side hustling in the future. The extra work ethic is admirable. I do worry that there is a precarious nature to some of this. Like those people you mentioned that work for DoorDash or Uber, you know, they're independent contractors. They're not getting paid vacation. They're not getting retirement benefits or health benefits. There can be a real precarity to this paycheck to paycheck kind of lifestyle. And, you know, there's a burnout risk too. If you're working 40 plus hours a week at one job and then you're doing something else on the side and maybe your spouse is doing the same, it doesn't leave a ton of time for the family or hobbies or other things. So those are some of the downsides. You know, we've got the glass half full of people working hard and making extra money, but there are some downsides to side hustles as well.
Interesting. Again, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst Ted Rossman with us once again. Ted, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, the retail landscape has undergone a significant transformation in recent years, from the first online shopping options to dedicated apps to curbside pickup and personalized virtual shopping assistants. And now, artificial intelligence is the latest technology ushering in a new era for retail and driving even more change across the ecosystem. Paul Krim is Chief Technology Officer of Honeywell Productivity Services and Solutions. Paul, all of these changes that we kind of alluded to over the past several years, has it all kind of really been building to this and where we are now?
Good morning, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it really has. If you think about how that landscape has transformed, especially in the last 4 years, there's been a step change in the amount of e-commerce orders, online ordering.
Sure.
And it, even if you think, if your listeners can just think about our own behavior with the in parallel, this explosion with social media, with all of these apps now that are basically giving us content creators, right, personalized to our own likes and dislikes, are now beginning to sell products that we purchase with just a click of a button, and it gets delivered within a day or less sometimes to our house. That effect, if you look at the retail establishment, has shifted from the majority of same day store sales being front of store to being a large portion happening in the back of store. And how do you manage that load? How do you manage the tracking and tracing and the inventory? And then even following up from that, this change has transformed the way we return products. So if you're buying something online, there's a greater chance that you're going to return those items versus if you walked into a store and touched it and felt it and decided to buy
right.
it. So whether it's the wrong size, wrong color, or something you didn't like, right? So all of these things have been busting underneath the covers for quite some time, but really over the last 4 years, it's become a step change and has created a great transformation.
And as we mentioned, AI, artificial intelligence, is like the next technology which is changing the paradigm, either again or even more, depending on how you look at it. But this is still something that is quite mysterious to many people. How are retailers adopting AI technologies right now today? In other words, how are consumers perhaps already interacting with this technology in ways they might not even realize?
Yeah, so you can even think it is mysterious and has been. I think it's going to change from being mysterious to being wide open. And the reason why is most of the AI that is in play today that retailers are using has been what I would consider back office AI. You know, these are the algorithms that are watching you place orders and determining already before you even place the buy button, what's the quickest route to your house and what warehouse should I go get it from and how do I maximize that experience for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
This AI has never really up front and center, right? It's something that happens under the covers, but it's been happening for quite some time. Another example of that is with Honeywell, we have voice-guided workflow where the retail establishments are using our technology to pick and pack the orders using voice and headsets instead of mobile devices or laptops, so that you can actually be hands-free while you're picking and packing, increasing the accuracy. You as a consumer basically see the effect of having same-day store delivery, seeing, you know, the orders that you get are 99% accurate.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting the wrong thing. It used to be if you remember back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you kind of were taking a chance of ordering something online because it might come the wrong size.
Right.
Even though
right.
you ordered the right size. Well,
yeah.
That's all gone away, but we don't really, it's sort of mysterious because we only see the effect of change. Whereas when you're looking at the new AI, especially within, and the, you know, in the media today with, you know, generative AI that can change video in real time and do voice translations in real time. And, you know, this new advent over the last 12 to 18 months of the chat assistants that aren't just ask a question, get an answer, but like have a conversation
mm-hmm.
with an AI agent in detail about what you're interested in. These are now right there in your face. You can actually use them and see them and you know that it's something different. You think about all the filters on social media that took the world by storm maybe more than a year ago now. It really was astounding to people, like, oh my goodness, I can actually change the way I look. I can change my hair color. And it's so real, right?
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
technology is now being able to bleed into the retail purchasing experience. And that's where we're going to see it. It's not going to be as mysterious anymore because you're going to see it in action as opposed to it being under the covers.
It is still really interesting, though. You talk about the ways AI improve worker productivity, the overall experience of customers without them necessarily directly interfacing maybe the way they will in the future. So, again, just another example of how this is that's here right now.
Yep. Yeah, and one of, if you think about the benefit of that, the advent of all this AI technology, especially when you add on automation on top of that, the net effect is increasing productivity by reducing the amount of time it takes to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you wonder, well, what's going to happen with that extra time? Now retail establishments and the retail associates can spend more time interacting with customers and thinking about their customers and being creative and creating content for their customers. And so you're going to see this net impact of not only increased productivity, but increased customer engagement. And what I would even call out very personalized customer engagement, where in the past, you might be engaged as a customer, as a group of likes and dislikes. So they understand what you like, dislike, so they market to groups of people. Whereas this technology is enabling the retail companies to market to you, the person, at your intimate, things that you like, mm-hmm. dislike, things that you have interests in.
Yeah.
This is going to be a game changer for creating that customer experience.
What is the future of artificial intelligence in the retail environment? I mean, where is this going? Now, you were talking about, some of the applications, many of which can actually be leveraged now. Mm-hmm. But looking ahead in your crystal ball to 5 or 10 years from now, where are we?
Well, you're definitely going to see an increase even more than before with automation. As I mentioned earlier, reducing that amount of time, creating more productivity, that's not going away. You're gonna see the engagement with the customer, like actual individualized customer marketing, is going to start taking on a different meaning. And then if you step into what we're seeing with chat assistants, your experience, either as a consumer or as a worker in the retail world, the ability to use interactive multimodal agents to ask a question, get an answer, and take an action is going to change everything. And maybe just to dive into that one step further, if you think about what I think most of your listeners are familiar with, the chat assistants that are out on the market for general use.
Mm-hmm.
You used to have to browse the web, search for something, and then you have to dive into every link. And maybe you wanted to change the oil in your car, and you were looking for the link that could explicitly tell you how to do it for your car. Now, when you ask a chat assistant, how do I change the oil of my car by model, by year? It doesn't give you a list of links that you have to look through. It gives you the answer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you're in that retail world, even as a consumer, to get answers that much faster, that much more specific, to bring that contextual information to bear instantly without you having to navigate, or even an associate having to navigate through and find the answer for you, that's going to change the dynamic.
Yeah,
that's a big item in the future that we see coming.
And by the way, I mentioned this because this week, obviously, our minds are on Amazon Prime Day, and all of that is getting an awful lot of attention. This is a lot more than just the Amazons of the world, the giant online retailers. This is everyone, and in the future will really be everyone. Right on down to the mom and pops.
That's right. I think you're tapping into something here. This is it, technology continues to democratize, and you're seeing this technology being readily available at the hands of everybody, mm-hmm. including the mom and pops.
Yeah.
And so it really is going to democratize what a lot of the larger vendors have been able to do for the last decade is now going to be totally possible for any size establishment to take advantage of.
Paul Krim is Chief Technology Officer of Honeywell Productivity Services and Solutions, talking about the present and future applications of artificial intelligence in retail. Where do we get more information about all of this?
Absolutely. So if you go to automation.honeywell.com, that's a great landing site that will show you a lot of the technologies that are being put into the businesses by Honeywell.
Certainly is a fascinating topic. Awesome. With endless opportunities. Paul, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
This is how you know you're having a bad day. This is a bad day. From the International File, this is out of India, where a 59-year-old man found himself trapped in an elevator while he was headed to his doctor's appointment. Ravindran Nair, I believe is how you pronounce his name. It doesn't really matter. 59 years old, he found himself stuck between the first and second floor of the local hospital. This was Saturday afternoon when he went to for his doctor's appointment. In a series of unfortunate events, the alarm bell in the elevator did not work. He dropped his phone and it stopped working, so he couldn't call for help, and the lights went out. He said he was shouting and screaming for help. He even tried pulling apart the doors with his hands, didn't work. Apparently, nobody noticed the elevator was out. And I suppose if there's a bank of elevators, I mean, if it was only the one elevator, people would notice the elevator was out. But it was one of a bank of elevators, and so nobody noticed that that one wasn't functioning. So he's stuck in the elevator. He's got no phone. The alarm won't work. The lights are out. It became so, and nobody knew what happened. The guy just disappeared. His family actually even filed a missing persons report. 42 hours later, on Monday morning, he was found and freed when an elevator operator finally arrived. Yes, to do some routine maintenance on the elevator. That's when they discovered that the elevator was out of service. He spent 42 hours stuck in an elevator. And the worst part of this, well, I don't know about the worst part, but crazy part of it, he was stuck between the first and second floor. So it wasn't like he was like 50 stories up or anything. It was between the first and second floor that he was stuck for 42 hours. Family even filed a missing persons report. He's going to be fine, obviously. So that is a good, happy ending to the story. But that is how you know you are having a bad day, to be sure. Elsewhere in the broken news, in Orlando, Florida, Dateline Orlando, Florida, Christopher Morgan was arrested after pigging out on snacks and drinks at a local Walgreens store. Might have had something to do with the fact that it was in the wee hours of the morning after the store was closed when this happened. Police arrived at the Walgreens in response to a store alarm going off and found Mr. Morgan treating himself to Tostitos, spinach dip, chips, Reese's Pieces, and Ghirardelli chocolate. He also had a Dr. Pepper and a pack of Newport cigarettes, among other things. He was just having a grand old time at the Walgreens, the wee hours of the morning. While placing Mr. Morgan under arrest, the officer asked if there was anyone else inside, to which he replied, I don't know. I don't know. He was arrested for burglary, petty theft, and resisting arrest for tussling with officers and spitting on one of them after being placed in the patrol car. When asked what he was doing in the Walgreens, he said, I came in to use the bathroom. I came in and I just came in to use the bathroom. Kendall. Also in the Sunshine State, Florida man, when questioned by police and his girlfriend, reportedly jumped into the ocean to avoid unlocking his phone. That seems rather extreme, doesn't it? Body cam footage posted to YouTube shows two officers questioning a man named AJ and his girlfriend near Key West. In the video, AJ is arguing with officers over showing his identification. And when his girlfriend asks for his phone's passcode to help identify him, he jumps into the water. After a 7-minute swim, officers placed AJ under arrest. His girlfriend can be heard shouting in the background, "We're done! We're done! After this, I swear we are done." I would rather take a felony rap than let his girl access his phone. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. There's probably a much larger story. Couple of unusual shootings in the broken news. Now, in both cases, everybody is going to be okay. Victims in the case are going to recover. First of all, in Chicago, a man accused of robbing a driver at gunpoint in the Elmhurst subdivision and trying to leave the scene, all while dressed as a woman. Kind of weird. Benny Gates, charged with armed robbery with a firearm, happened Friday morning. Authorities say Mr. Gates fled the crime scene but was arrested a short time later after a brief foot chase. Apparently, it's hard to run in high heels. The victim not hurt. Not to be outdone, a man in San Diego has survived being shot 6 times in the head. You believe this? 6 times in the head. Police say the 32-year-old victim was driving on Tuesday night when someone fired 16 shots into his car. The car was hit 9 times. The victim shot 6 times in the head, but survived. Police still on the search for the suspect. The victim, I think, should be buying lottery tickets. About now, 6 times in the head and survived. Wow. Maybe the luckiest person on earth. And finally, in the broken news this morning, Costco wants to be your one-stop shop for the apocalypse, apparently. The Wholesale Club is now offering its ReadyWise Emergency Food Supply Bucket, which provides 150 freeze-dried food servings with a shelf life of 25 years. 150 freeze-dried meals, a shelf life of 25 years. It is listed for $79.99 online, but it is cheaper if you buy one at one of their brick-and-mortar stores at Costco. But you better hurry, because it says here you never know how long the sale will last or when the apocalypse will begin. So, great, limited time only. Be your one-stop shop for the apocalypse. Okay, then. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Ohio. This message presented by the OHSAA and the Ohio Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association,
along with WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. I saw a survey recently that said 76% of young adults, we're talking Gen Zers and millennials, 76% of us believe that our travels, our vacations, say a lot about who we are. You can glean a lot about the type of person is by the type of vacation that they take. 72% say that travel is a part of how they express themselves and will seek out vacations to focus on things that they're passionate about. And that may be more true than you think. Relating to that, a separate survey of 2,000 adults finds that 41% of Americans would love to have a summer fling, a tryst, over the course of the summer. And whether or not we are currently attached or we are currently in a committed relationship doesn't appear to matter. 95% of those in relationships don't plan on breaking up, but 26% of them are still interested in some sort of extracurricular summer romance. 74% dream of having one of those Hollywood meet-cute moments while on vacation. 17% of those in a relationship are looking to get frisky while on vacation. 37% of all respondents are looking for a vacation hookup. 52% go so far as to say that they had the best sex of their life when they were on vacation. Best of their life on vacation for 52%. One expert said the freedom that comes from visiting somewhere you've never been and where no one knows you allows your desires and your imagination to run wild. Two out of three respondents in this survey are likely to try a unique experience on vacation. 53% say they would like to be intimate in a romantic location, a specific romantic location. 52% say that they would like to try out new things in the bedroom. And 45% will bring lingerie along with them when they travel. So, happening around town this weekend, it's time to strap on your spurs and don your 10-gallon hat. Round up the posse. The Cowboy Days celebration at Ghost Town, just south of town. And Cheryl Larbus is with us this morning. Cheryl, how long has it been that you've had Ghost Town?
Well,
you bought this how many years ago?
We have probably, we would buy pieces of it from the original owner, Ed Galitza. Mm-hmm. And probably it's been 11 years or 12 years, but it took quite some time to get it back into shape because the raccoons, basically wildlife,
for a long time it was it was, you know, just kind of, it was a ghost town. Was a ghost town. So what has that been like, kind of bringing that back to life? Because I know a lot of folks have memories of, it was before my time in Findlay, but a lot of people have memories of Ghost Town from years past.
And that's the thing, I have, back when I lived in Detroit, Michigan, and my grandmother lived here in Findlay, we came for the sesquicentennial, and we went out to Ghost Town.
Okay.
And that was quite a big deal. And we had an absolute ball, and it was very family-oriented at that time, when Ed and his dad had actually built it up. Yeah. And I've got even a picture of Governor Rhodes, who came during there. They had, he had other things he was supposed to do for the sesquicentennial, but they had a hard time getting him out of Ghost Town because he was having such a ball.
That's fun.
So basically, we have taken on what Ed started, and we are honoring what he started. And just as he started it for families, that's our goal, is really to have a fun, affordable place that somebody can come. And right now, the Westerns are big. So it fits perfectly.
Yeah.
We've got cowboys. We've got an ornery. We say he is the best worst cowboy. And his name is Wiley West. And these kids, he has them looking for things. He's quite a character. And he actually used to be a podiatrist in Findlay, Ohio.
So this has really been a labor of love, kind of bringing this back to life.
John, my husband, is a restorer.
Yeah.
other things that people would tear down, he restores.
And so that helps when it comes to, you know, a project like this, because as you said, this was, you know, no easy task, kind of evicting the wildlife, as it were, and kind of restoring. It sounds weird to say restoring a ghost town, but restoring a ghost town to a ghost town.
Exactly.
So it's a little weird
In
that respect. And I know over the years, you've had a number of different events, different themed events there, you know, that, and, you know, how do you come up with the ideas? I mean, you know, some of them is kind of obvious, and then other times I would imagine you kind of think out of the box and
create,
you know, unique ideas and unique events.
And I think the most recent thing that Ghost Town kind of stood for was the great big huge craft shows that people would park a mile down the road and walk to.
Yeah.
And we started with that idea, but it has kind of gone away from just the humongous craft show that we want to make it an affordable place that people can come. But it's where, you know, my husband, John, he has the Buffalo Trading Company also.
Right.
And the theme of it is where the West comes alive.
Yeah.
As you will find when you go in the gun store and as you will find as you come to Ghost Town.
So, well, and with respect to that, it was kind of a natural extension of the shop. So,
yes.
You know, it fit really well. So this weekend, you've got Cowboy Days going on. Tell us about this.
Okay, well, Cowboy Days, this is our third Cowboy Days. And so we have actually got some cowboys that we're going to have, real-life cowboys that kids can come out and meet. And they've been meeting Wiley for a while. He's fun, but he's going to have more there.
His and friends.
There's coming. Yes. Yeah. And there are going to be some dramas going on. And we're going to have pictures where kids can get their autographs. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. We've got pool noodle stick horse races for the kids.
Okay.
And then which we have plenty in our stable, in the Ghost Town stable, that kids can use.
Okay.
Or they can build their own.
Okay.
For like $8, and they're adorable. They're absolutely adorable.
Very
so,
cool.
Again, we want to make it available for those who can afford, that want to do that, but a fun family event. It's only $5 for an adult, and every adult can get one child in for free.
And then you've also got, you know, the petting zoo.
Right.
I thought this was kind of interesting, a watermelon seed spitting contest, it says. So.
We're pretty darn excited about that. That's going to be fun, and it's going to be in the entrance garden area.
And and in the traditional Western theme, you're going to be panning for gold. And,
yes,
you know,
we've got our sluice that's set up. That the kids absolutely love that. That is something that does cost.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, again, our goal is reasonable.
Yeah.
Our kids' meal, you know, a hot dog, chips, applesauce, and a drink for $5. So we're trying to make it, Finley, basically our families need a place where they can come and get away from screens.
Yeah.
That is our goal,
is
to create family fun experiences. We're going to have scavenger hunts. But it's going to be where the family goes and does something.
Yeah. And if you've never been to Ghost Town, for those who have not been, it's really kind of tucked away. You go and you park, and then you have shuttles, but you can walk back to the entrance. But it's really kind of tucked back into the woods. So you really feel like you're off in a different, entirely different world. So
it is.
Really
it's
cool.
Acreage. And John, this year, actually added some cool things to look at on your way through the woods.
Okay.
And the woods is just beautiful. It is, if you're able to, it's a wonderful walk.
Yeah.
I personally, especially this weekend, the weather's supposed to be unbelievable.
Right. Yeah.
So we're excited about that.
So it is Saturday and Sunday. What, it's 9 to 5 on Saturday, noon to 5 on Sunday. As you mentioned, $5 admission for the family, for the per person, and then the kids get in free with the adults.
Yes. So, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa.
Bring them all. Right. Bring your posse.
Yes.
As they say. And don't forget the cowboy hats. We've got a link on our webpage for more information about Cowboy Days in Ghost Town this weekend. And Cheryl Larvis, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
I appreciate being able to come here.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about every day on the program at our webpage, Bookmark us. Check back every day. GoodMornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, when cost of living issues become cost of loving issues, how concerns over finances are affecting the dating scene, and the ways many couples are having the money talk earlier in their relationship than they used to. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.